Hey guys, I'm Kenzie.
And I'm Amy.
And you are listening to episode 8 of Sheer Crime. Today we are covering the Netflix documentary, American Murder, The Family Next Door. This is the tragic story of the slaying of a pregnant Shanann Watts and her two small daughters, Bella and Celeste, at the hands of their father. Now's your cue to grab a drink, because the American dream isn't always what you think. Hey, girl.
Hey.
How you doing?
Oh, my gosh. I'm doing great.
Well, I'm not, because we have fucking snow on the ground here.
Seriously, what is going on? 2020, you have really outdone yourself. Snow in October in Minnesota. Now, that's not super weird.
It's not super crazy, but not this early.
Not this early and not this much.
Oh, I think we got like 5 or 6 inches. I mean.
Yeah.
We couldn't get into the driveway the other day. Last night. No way. We couldn't even get into the driveway. I'm like, are you kidding me?
I know.
It's not even fall yet. It's not like it hasn't been fall yet.
No. And the worst part is I looked at my Facebook memories, because I do every morning. It's kind of my like routine.
I love it.
And the first thing that popped up was a picture of my husband. Now, it was from last year, but it must have been on a Sunday or something. Or I just posted it late. Mm-hmm. But it was a picture of him in his Sunday best standing out in our front yard in front of that big, beautiful red tree that we have.
Yeah.
And he is doing like the whole dab, you know, pose. And the tree is gorgeous and the sun is shining and he's in a t-shirt.
Oh my gosh.
1 year ago.
Oh my gosh.
I know.
It's very sad to think about.
Yes, it is. I think this calls for a drink.
Please.
So what are we drinking this week, Kenzie?
So we're going back to our usual Crook and Marker, of course. It's just too good.
We
can't stop buying these variety packs here.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
But this time we're trying the standard black cherry.
Ooh.
So it's not a lemonade. It's not like a mix of something. It's just the standard black cherry. So I'm excited to try it out.
I am too. Let's get a little taste of summer.
Please.
Yes.
Please. To make us forget about this terrible winter weather we're in right now.
Such bullshit.
All right. Let's do it. Perfect.
I got my nails done. They're super short. I can open cans now.
Perfect.
Can you believe it? All right. Let's try it.
Oh, it's perfection.
OMG. I have never tried this flavor. This literally tastes like cherry Coke or like a cherry pop.
I feel like it even tastes better.
Yeah.
I love black cherry. Almost anything.
Oh, yeah.
I love black cherry.
Yeah.
Super good, guys. Highly recommend.
Big time. Ooh. This one will be consumed quickly.
So it feels kind of weird that we aren't talking about Gabriel this week, since we've spent the last 6 weeks covering his case.
Yeah.
But now we're on to the Watts family murders. And this is horrific.
It is, in a totally different way.
Yes, absolutely.
No torture involved.
You know, it's very scary, because no one expected this to happen to a family like this.
Yeah.
And we'll dive into that a little bit more in the episode. But all right, Amy, why don't you start us off this week?
So to give you a tiny bit of a background on the Watts family, we jumped into Wikipedia. Mm-hmm. And I know that a lot of people like to think that that's not maybe the most reliable source out there. However, these are facts and we've double checked them.
Mm-hmm.
So this occurred on August 13th of 2018 in Frederick, Colorado. So not too far from us. To sum it up, we have the husband, Christopher Lee Watts. He was born May 16th of 1985. Basically, he admits to killing his pregnant wife, Shanann Catherine Watts, born January 10th of 1984, by strangulation. He also then later admits to killing their daughters, 4-year-old Bella and 3-year-old Celeste, also known as Cece, by smothering them with their blankets. He ends up pleading guilty on November 6th, 2018, to multiple counts of first-degree murder, and we'll get into that later on. But basically, This was a, you know, picture perfect family of four. They were, you know, man and wife. They had 2.5 kids because at this time she was still pregnant. They had a tiny little dog, a beautiful house out in Colorado. You know, they're showing pictures on the screen of like the background and it's gorgeous. Mm-hmm. They said that they had actually fallen in love after like a trip out there and decided to move there because they're both from North Carolina. So, I mean, I've been there. I don't know if you've ever been there.
I have not.
Oh, you need to go.
I hear from a lot of people. It's absolutely breathtaking.
Stunning. It's almost like I can't believe that places like that actually exist. Yeah. It was so surreal.
Yes.
Is a good way to put it. Now, in the beginning of this documentary, and this is, I'm just going to preface, this documentary is very different than what we're used to watching.
Yes, it is.
It's not set up like any other documentary that I've ever seen.
And it's really entirely told through archival type of footage and Shanann's social media stuff and text messages and home videos.
Yeah.
It's really different.
Yeah. There's no dramatizations. There's no actors.
No. Nope.
These are literally like home videos and stuff. Mm-hmm. In a way, like, thank God for the internet.
Yeah.
It starts off with Shanann introducing herself and her girls on like a Facebook Live type of a video. Now, mm-hmm. if you've ever done Facebook Live before, you just click a button and basically anybody who is logged into Facebook at that time or gets notifications about your posts will know that you're online doing a video. They can pop in and watch it happen live. It's kind of like you're a news reporter and they're the audience.
Yes.
So this is what she's doing. And she's, you know, talking about herself and her family. She's talking about how they had moved to Colorado, talking about how Chris had gotten a job out there. And she mentions that he had gotten a really good job that really respects him and that's really huge for him. And I thought that was interesting. Mm-hmm. I'll mention later on. But that was something that she kind of stressed, that it was huge for him. They seem like the picture-perfect family. She's, you know, showing different scenes of him playing with the girls, with toys. You see a shot of her talking about baking cookies, mm-hmm. explaining that one of her daughters has multiple food allergies. And she talks about how she likes to bake and then Chris does the dishes. And it just seems perfect. Picture perfect.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it starts. It seems like basically half of the people I follow on Facebook.
Yes. I think most people on Facebook are this way.
Yeah.
And I don't think we like to admit it,
mm-hmm.
but how many quote unquote bad photos do you see?
Right.
Or like real life arguments on Facebook? Never.
No.
Literally zero.
No.
So that's kind of where this is stemming from, I guess. Or we kind of are now seeing the cracks because we get that glimpse into that real life look of what their text message exchanges are, how she's talking to her friends, and not just the glamour of Facebook and Instagram.
Yeah.
So just to kind of give a background of my personal feelings towards this case, it was heartbreaking for me. Yeah. I mean, I really was bent out of shape for weeks after finding out about this.
Yeah.
And I don't know why it hits so hard, but I think all the videos and the posts that we got to see from Shanann and from the girls,
mm-hmm.
it just broke me. I mean, it was so sad to see the love in those girls' eyes for their dad.
Yeah.
And to know what he did to them in this moment of rage. So the story starts in the early morning hours of August 13th, 2018, at the Watts home in Frederick, Colorado. We see Nicole Atkinson calling. Now, this is Shanann's friend and colleague. They both work for the multi-level marketing company Level, I think it's called, or Lavelle.
Lavelle, I think, is how they can say it.
And they're selling Thrive.
Yeah, which most of us have a friend out there who has done it or talks about it. It's that little patch that people put on and it supposedly gives you energy and helps you lose weight faster.
Right, exactly. And so they had been on a trip in Arizona for this company. And she was calling the morning of the 14th to ensure Shanann's doctor's appointments went all right.
Yeah.
Missed call, missed text messages. Shanann wasn't responding. Shanann was 15 weeks pregnant with their son, whom they planned to call Nico Lee Watts. And seriously, Everyone needs a friend like Nicole.
Oh my
gosh. She's amazing.
No, seriously. I hope to at someday be like a quarter of the friend that she is.
She literally drops everything, goes to her house after not hearing from her for only like 3 hours.
Yeah.
In the morning.
Yeah.
She knew. She had that like sixth sense that something was not right. And she knew her friend would get back to her immediately. And when she didn't, alarms went off.
When you think about it too, now, I don't know if you've ever been involved in any of the MLM type businesses. I was involved in definitely one, maybe two.
Okay.
And you basically are a slave to your phone at that point. I mean, mm-hmm. your phone is connected. You don't hardly go hours without posting something.
Yeah.
I had one time where I had taken a break. I was really busy one day while I was in the thick of this job. And my cousin, who's like my best friend, she's my Nicole.
Yeah.
She messaged me and she's like, "Are you okay?" And I was like, "Yeah, why?" I responded right away. I'm like, "Yeah, why?" And she goes, "When I don't see you posting something on social media, I immediately assume that you're dead. So you need to let me know if you're taking a yeah. break." And I was like, "I'm so sorry." But how sweet.
Fill me in.
And now I do it to her all the time.
Yeah.
You know, she gets busy and I'm like, "Hey, are you dead? I need to know what's going on here."
Right.
Yeah.
So we learn that Nicole basically calls the police for a welfare check. She wants them to come over and help figure out if she's okay.
Yeah.
We get to see on the police body cam that the officer arrives, gets the initial story from Nicole, what happened when they arrived, when she was dropped off, all that kind of stuff. And he starts looking through their windows,
yep,
knocking on doors, checking the entire perimeter of the home, really.
Well, yeah. I mean, he's checking to see if there was any type of like, you know, indication of a break-in or something.
Yes. And he currently doesn't have the authority to just walk in,
right,
or break in. He doesn't have that authority. And he kind of states that too, that he needs the homeowner's permission.
Yeah. At that point, it's almost like on cue, right? And of course, mm-hmm. there's probably like time like skipped out of this. But
right.
At that moment, Chris shows up in his truck and he, you know, shows up. He's letting everybody in. The officer asks, "Is it okay for him to enter the house?" He's like, "Yeah, yeah, come on in." They're looking around, checking the house for Shanann and the kids. Yep. He doesn't seem to be too nervous. You know, he's going through each of the rooms. He gets to the upstairs where the bedrooms are. And he says, you know, or mentions that the girls' blankets are gone. They're blankies.
Mm-hmm.
And the police officer said, "Oh, would that be, you know, something that they would take on like a short trip?" And he's like, "Well, yeah, they need them to go to sleep."
And I almost thought that he was trying to put a storyline together for some sort of like kidnapping theory or something.
Totally.
That was kind of in the back of my mind when I first saw him doing this. I almost felt like he was trying to like implant this idea, right, in the police officer's head that this could possibly be the reason for why they're missing.
Yeah. He then finds her phone, and that alone is like a huge red flag. Mm-hmm. Nicole looks like she's about to vomit when he says that.
She becomes a ghost.
I mean, oh yeah, she turns white mm-hmm. as a sheet. And she is talking about, "Oh my gosh," and hands go right up to her face. I mean, she's shocked. So she knows her phone is her lifeline. And that's even what Chris says. It's her lifeline. She works from home. She needs to have her phone. But it's even turned off because mm-hmm. he has to take a minute to power it on. And he makes I don't know if it would be like considered a joke, but he makes a comment about like how it's going to start blowing up
mm-hmm.
because, you know, she is constantly in contact with clients and everyone else
yep.
and friends and family. So it's going to be a lot of bings coming out over the speaker. Now, the first thing that pops up on the screen. Now, the thing about this documentary is it pops up text messages throughout.
And it looks like a normal text message on like an iPhone.
Yeah. So it's not like all of a sudden they cut to a spot where they're going to talk about all the text messages. It comes in and out throughout, mostly when it's relevant. So at this time, he powers on the phone, and the first thing you see is a text message from Chris saying, "If you take the kids somewhere, please let me know where they are at." Now, this is timestamped at 7:40 a.m. That right there, huge red flag to me.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, well, I'll get into it a little bit more, but first of all, he knew that she had a doctor's appointment at 9 a.m. Why would he ask her to let him know where he was taking the girls or where she was taking the girls?
And
that was weird.
I would also be interested to see what the last 2 months of his morning text messages to her were.
Right. Did he text her at all during that time? Maybe
he ever do that? Did he ever talk to her like that? Did he ever say things like that?
Yeah.
It seems
weird.
It does seem weird.
Yeah. The next text message comes in from a friend at like 11 a.m. saying, "Let us know you're okay. Give us a sign." And then another text comes in, this one again from Chris, showing up at noon saying, "Can you call me, please?" And then Another text message at 1:19 p.m. I'm on my way home. Please be there. And then immediately after, another text message at 1:19 p.m. from Chris. Where are you? Right there, I believe he's building up an alibi.
Absolutely.
He's trying to, or maybe not an alibi, he's trying to build a story for what happened and trying to get himself or trying to get the spotlight off of him.
Exactly. I think a lot of people do that nowadays. They want to cover their tracks. And I also found it weird if we go back to why Shanann's phone was off.
Yeah.
Why would it ever be off?
Yeah. And it hadn't died because he powered it right back on.
And it turned on.
Right.
So he deliberately turned it off, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
Now, Nicole and the police find her purse on the counter, and it still has her medication in it. And we find out that Shanann has lupus, which is an inflammatory disease caused when your immune system attacks its own tissues.
Yeah.
And I actually know a lot about this because my grandma actually was diagnosed with lupus when she was about 40.
Oh, wow.
It's horrible. I mean, it's a horrible disease to live with, and there's no cure.
Yeah.
We see Shanann doing a video on World Lupus Day, and she's giving her viewers and her friends a little bit of a look into her life with this disease.
Yeah.
Shanann had been previously married and ended up getting a divorce. She made a goal to buy a house because this relationship had ruined her.
Yeah, it sounded like a very nasty breakup.
Yeah. She had said that her family didn't come from money, so she worked her ass off and built her first home. You guys, this house was massive. I am saying, holy shit, if that was here in Minnesota, that would cost probably $750,000, if not more.
It was beautiful. At 25 years old, she built this all on her own.
So any listeners in North Carolina,
yeah,
please watch this documentary and let us know what a house like that would cost down there, because I might be coming down there and building my own damn house.
And I'm going to be building one right next door.
Yes. So again, she mentions that she had been going through the darkest time of her life when she had gotten her diagnosis, and then she meets Chris.
Yeah.
And her life turned around. Obviously, in all of our eyes, it is tragic. But
yeah, but at the time it wasn't.
At the time it was not for her.
Yeah. I mean, he kind of seemed like a good shoulder, a support system that she needed. It sounds like she probably didn't get that from her last relationship.
Right.
So he was filling in gaps.
Exactly. Now, we didn't mention this at the top, but this documentary goes back and forth a lot.
A lot.
So stay with us because it cuts back and forth to all these different scenes constantly throughout the whole doc. Now, we're back to the police body cam, and the police officer asks Chris if Shanann ever has had seizures or blackouts, and Chris looks terrified. You can really see the look of terror in his face.
Oh, you can see the whites of his eyes all around.
And it was almost like I could see his heart beating.
Yes.
As fast as it was.
Yes.
You could just see it. It was crazy. Mm-hmm. And he was stumbling on his words, repeating himself a lot. I mean, all of these things are big red flags. And he had mentioned that she had taken Imitrix, which is a medication for migraines, but that Shanann took more than usual this month. And he's talking 100 miles per minute, if that's a thing. But that, again, had me going back to, is he trying to create this story? Like, something happened wrong in Shanann's brain. This medication changed it. He has like the whole kidnapper thing theory kind of floating around. I don't think he even has a story put together.
No.
At all.
Not a solid one. And he also kind of brings up that they had just gotten back from North Carolina, that she had been out there for a while, that the humidity might have also had a play in with the headaches. I guess I don't really notice humidity per se, but I do get headaches that are weather related.
Really?
Yeah. When the weather changes drastically.
Interesting.
I will have a headache build to the point of a migraine by the end of the day. I'm in bed. There can be no sound, no light, no nothing coming near me for at least a good 4 or 5 hours.
Wow.
So maybe he was just trying to talk about the fact that she had just been out of town.
Could be.
Maybe.
Devil's advocate, right?
For sure.
Now, they also find the wedding ring. They find that on the nightstand. After they found that ring, they pan back to their wedding video. So Chris and Shanann's wedding video.
Yeah.
Shanann had posted another video on Facebook, and she's talking about how she had pushed him away. She had gave him an out every single day. He went to her colonoscopy. She tortured him and rejected him, and he still stayed.
Yeah.
He was still there and still stuck around. We see Shanann's parents at their wedding, and her dad says that they couldn't ask for a better man for her. And it's just so haunting. Like, those words now are so haunting.
Yeah.
I'm sure her parents could not watch this documentary, because I'm sure they haven't seen that video.
Maybe not.
Ever.
Yeah.
Or maybe just right after the wedding or something.
Yeah.
We also noticed that Chris was quite a bit heavier.
Yeah.
Then compared to how we see him now.
Yeah.
In the wedding video, you see that he's quite a bit heavier.
Yeah. More, a little more beefcake.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
Real quick, going back to him finding her wedding ring, did you not think it looked way too staged?
Yeah.
The way that he came out holding it.
Looking at it.
As if he just found buried treasure. To me, you know, we all come up with our own little theories. To me, I was like, oh, he's totally trying to make it look like she just fled with the kids and left the wedding, left the phone, left her life behind. And I was just like, it just seemed way too convenient.
Yeah.
Way too convenient.
Well, and I thought about it a little bit deeper. I'm like, he probably realized he forgot to put it on her.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, because he did almost look a little like haunted when he found
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
So maybe it wasn't an act. Maybe he was like, oh shit.
Holy shit, I forgot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking too, she's only 14, 15 weeks pregnant. This happened
August.
Okay. So it happened in the summer. Now, they obviously don't have the humidity that we have here. And she had just been in Arizona. So they don't have humidity there either. But I'm thinking like, I know in the summer, not pregnant, my fingers can swell a little bit and my ring feels a little tight.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been a couple of times where I will take it off at night and then put it back on in the morning.
Yep.
So maybe she did take it off at night while she was pregnant. Who knows?
Totally would think that she got home. She got home really late.
Yeah.
Or early morning and took her ring off and set it on the nightstand.
Yeah.
And it stayed there.
Yeah. Another weird thing about Chris is it seems like, and for all of you true crime junkies out there, you know that a lot of times the perpetrator will insert themselves into investigations mm-hmm. almost too much and be almost too helpful. And this did seem like that to me for sure.
Yep.
I had my spidey sense going the whole time. And he is talking to the police officer about how, you know, should I be, you know, driving around the routes that she would usually go? And the police officer kind of looked at him and was like, well, where would she go? Like, what do you mean by that? And he goes, well, I don't know, like down the street to the neighbor's house. It was just kind of like
awkward,
super awkward.
Because it's not normal. That's not a normal thing that you would say.
No.
You know, he's just trying to divert the attention elsewhere.
Yes, absolutely. And make him look like he's doing his duty. They then talk about how the neighbor next door has a surveillance camera. There's my dogs barking in the background, you guys. Just learn to love it. A surveillance camera on his like front door. So it sounds like there had been maybe some like petty theft going on, maybe little car break-ins here and there going on in the neighborhood. So this guy put up a
security camera.
Motion detected, right? Is that the word? Where motion yeah. sets it off? That's what
yeah,
he said?
Like motion sensor.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's got that set up. So they walk over to the neighbor's house. They go in. They're watching it. The footage shows Chris backing his truck up into his driveway at about 5:17 a.m. And he says to the police officer, yeah, I was just, you know, pulling my truck in. I was loading up my tools for the day for work. He was like, oh, okay. And then he starts talking about how, yeah, we got this camera, or my neighbor got this camera because of all these like break-ins lately. And, you know, I had somebody like tampering with my truck one day, blah, blah, blah. Odd, first of all.
Mm-hmm.
I also find it really odd that people don't park in their own garages. Can I just throw that out there? Why was he parked on the street?
A lot of people don't.
It's so weird to me. Why have a garage if you're not going to park in it?
Well, and I was kind of thinking too that maybe his truck was too big for the
potentially.
Garage,
it was a big work truck.
And I know trucks are sometimes too tall even for garages or too long. Right?
That's true. It could have been like an extended.
Yep. Yeah. Because her car was in the garage.
Right. And she had like a smaller or like a regular size SUV.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. So The footage shows him backing up. He talks about putting tools into his truck for work. Now, the whole time, he's kind of pacing, and he truly is, like, over-explaining everything, almost, in my mind, to make the cop not 100% pay attention to the footage and instead focus on him, all right, like a diversion.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, the surveillance footage stops, and all of a sudden, oddly, like super oddly, there's a program that shows up on the TV because the guy is showing it on his like TV. And all of a sudden, it's like a uterus, right? Like a womb with like a baby inside that pops up. And you can almost feel Chris shit his pants because all of a sudden he looks at it and he looks back at the police officer and he's like, oh yeah, by the way, she's pregnant. And he's like, well, how pregnant is she? And he's like, oh, about 14 or 15 weeks.
Well, and it's interesting because lately, just within the past couple weeks, I've been hearing a lot of chatter about that scene with the fetus. Because if you continue to watch the TV screen at the very end, before the TV either gets turned off or the camera goes away from it, you see a skull. And
foreshadow much?
Literally. How ironic that that would show up on the screen. And I said, is that some sort of sign? Because how crazy.
Yeah. And I was like, what the hell was this neighbor watching before they all like walked into his house?
I know.
Was this like Discovery Channel or something?
He actually turned it on. He was on the surveillance and then he changed the channel to this specific channel. So I'm like, that's really weird.
It was really weird. At that point, you see Chris leaving the neighbor's house. And the one deputy, there must have been two deputies, because the one is going to take him back over to the house. And then the one who was there the whole time says, I'm just going to stick behind. I'm going to get this guy's statement, get his information.
Yep.
Then I'll be right over, which is standard, you know. And as soon as Chris walks out of the door, the neighbor, who is unnamed, by the way, they never give us his name, turns and looks at the cop. And he's like, he's not acting right. And you can tell he is like, nope. Shit is weird. I don't like this. And the cop's like, oh, really? And he's like, yeah, he is never, ever fidgety. He was rocking back and forth. He has never loaded stuff in and out of his truck before work before. And then he also goes on to say that, you know, usually he's really quiet, subdued, not so chatty. And he like never stopped talking.
I love this neighbor.
Yeah.
He immediately, when Chris leaves, he's like, yep, that's not right.
No.
None of this is right. You got to look at him right away. And he is a hero.
Seriously.
That is how we all need to be.
Don't get involved.
No. Get involved and say when you see shit that's weird or that isn't normal.
Yeah. Be a speaker.
It's now August 14th, 2018. Missing day two. The Frederick police speak to Chris to try and get information about Shanann and the girls to put up missing persons flyers, which is standard.
Right.
For Bella, she's 42 inches, 40 pounds, brown hair and brown eyes. Celeste is 37 inches, 37 pounds, blonde hair and hazel eyes. And then we learn that Shanann has a scar on her forehead from the car accident that she had years ago. And we see the police going door to door with these missing person flyers, sticking them in people's doors, talking to them about Shanann, seeing if they've seen anything, any suspicious activity. Have they seen Shanann or the girls roaming around?
Yeah, because her car was still there. So what, did she leave on foot?
Yep. We pan back to the house because they're setting up for an interview with Chris to be shown on the news, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
They also have cadaver dogs and crime scene people coming into the home at the same time. First thing they notice was that it was very clean. They had been in a bathroom, it looked like.
Yeah.
And the crime scene investigator said, this seems too clean.
Yeah.
Chris is saying now to camera that he wants them back. He hopes they're safe, blah, blah, blah. Just a bunch of garbage, if you ask me.
Oh, totally.
Cut to the police department for the interrogation of Chris Watts. The investigator says that he needs to get into the hard conversation that Chris and Shanann had about their marriage. Because Chris had mentioned that in their interview that they did have some sort of argument.
Yeah, like an emotional conversation,
he says. But he didn't want to get into it.
Yep.
Chris said that they talked about how he was feeling about their relationship over the last 6 weeks and being apart and figuring out who they were and that the spark wasn't there anymore. So the investigator asks to see if they can connect the dots between them being upset or Shanann being upset about that conversation. And then now Shanann and the kids are gone.
Yeah. Like, look back into this conversation. Look back into your brain. Is there something that was said that would give us a clue as to where she is?
Well, and then Chris answers with, did I cause this? Was the first thing he said. And I think he immediately backtracked.
Yep.
And said, like, did I make her feel like she needed to leave? Because he knew that he didn't mean it to come off that way.
Yeah.
But it did.
100%. The documentary then cuts back to 7 weeks earlier. So this is the flight from Colorado to North Carolina. It's showing Shanann, Bella, Cece, and Shanann's dad, Frank. And they are flying into the airport. And it then points to a camera shot of Sandy, who is Shanann's mom. Mm-hmm. And she is, you know, crouched down on the floor like, come here, girls. And you see the girls run to her.
So cute.
So excited. I mean,
they haven't seen her in a long time.
No. And oh my gosh. It honestly just brought me back to 7 years ago when my daughter was that age. Mm-hmm. And everything, you know, she just loved us. She was so sweet all the time. But I was just like, oh, that's the best.
Yeah.
Fun fact about me, I never wanted to be a parent, but I always wanted to be a grandparent. I couldn't wait to be a grandma, but I never wanted to go through childbirth.
Oh, I know.
Scared the shit out of me when I was younger.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm like, I can't wait to be a grandma. So I remember people asking me, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I'm like, a grandma. So this right here, I was like, yes, yes, this is my moment.
It was,
yes. It was so cute. And then you see, you know, little footage of the girls and Sandy holding hands and stomping through mud puddles and singing happy birthday to her. Also, side note, her name is Sandy. My mother-in-law's name is Sandy. They look identical.
Really?
There are so many parts in this where I'm like, that's totally Sandy. And it's also Sandy. It's weird.
That is bizarre.
It was super weird. They just have a very, like, very much the same, like, funness about them.
Sure. Yeah.
At that point, we see Agent Greg Zettner with the Colorado Bureau of Investigation meeting with Nicole. Now, she's talking to them about an argument that Shanann gets into with Chris's mom, Cindy, about 3 weeks into their trip into mm-hmm. North Carolina. Now, both Chris and Shanann are from North Carolina, so both of their families are there.
Yep.
So Shanann is there at this time by herself with the girls, visiting both the families for
yep.
a little bit.
Yep.
Obviously, she works from home. She's able to take this time off because she can essentially work wherever she wants to.
Exactly.
Now, it sounds like this whole argument stemmed from a visit to Cindy's house, Chris's mom, and she wants to feed the girls some ice cream, and Shanann freaks out. Because apparently there were all the ingredients in this ice cream was basically everything that Cece was allergic to.
Yep. And I believe they said it was pistachios and walnuts.
Something like that. Yeah. And she talks about how basically this woman is trying to kill her child. Now, not to get off on a huge tangent, but this to me was like super weird. And obviously we don't have the whole story. We don't have video footage of it.
Yeah.
But I'm like, why would you fly off the handle over something like that when you could calmly tell her she can't have that?
Yeah.
It seemed very weird, but obviously we find out later there was already animosity between yes. Cindy and Shanann.
Yes. Between Chris's family.
Chris's family mm-hmm. and Shanann, for sure. Yeah. So there's then a text message that pops up on the screen from Shanann to Chris, and it said, you should call your dad and tell him you did not appreciate your mom putting your daughter at risk today. I mean, you can clearly see that Shanann is being all mama bear about this. You know, she's yelling at Cindy. She gets kicked out of the house. Cindy actually tells her to leave
mm-hmm.
and, you know, claims that she never even knew about this allergy. She said she never wanted to see them again. Shanann did. She never wanted to be around Chris's family again. They end up celebrating a birthday for Cece while they're in North Carolina. And you see none of the Watts in attendance. At this,
I felt that was just a little immature because as grandparents, you want to be there for your grandchildren. This isn't about your relationship with the mother, even if it's bad. You think that they would still attend because they were still invited.
Oh, yeah.
And Shanann had told her friend that, nope, they were no-shows. And right. that, to me, breaks my heart for the grandkids, because they're the ones that are getting hurt here.
Yeah.
It's not the other way around.
Right.
Like, to me, I just thought that was a little childish.
So the whole thing could have been, you know, possibly a little more dramatic than maybe it actually was. I mean, yep. this is all hearsay, right? We don't know for sure what happened because there was no camera on them at that moment during this argument. Nothing is posted about it. We just hear about it from Shanann to her friends and whatnot. The next part that they have is just a quick little blurb of Chris on the disappearance, you know, back in the interrogation room. And what I thought was really interesting is he mentioned something about how, he sounds like a true crime connoisseur at this point, because he's like, well, you know, it must have been somebody that she knew because there was no sign of a break-in.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Captain Obvious. Everybody knows that.
Right.
It was just, he just seems way too helpful and way too obedient.
Mm-hmm.
And I just...
I see right through it.
I can't do it.
Mm-hmm. They now send us back 5 weeks earlier. Shanann is trying to FaceTime Chris in the evening. He doesn't answer, but texts her instead, basically stating he didn't get her FaceTime calls and he's really sorry. Shanann responds, forget, quote unquote, not getting my calls. You fucking call your kids when you wake up. And she also mentioned that he had not called them one time on his own since they had been in North Carolina.
Yeah.
Which also seems weird.
A little bit.
I mean, even if he didn't want to talk to Shanann, you think he would want to call his daughters and talk to them. And Nicole comes back to tell us that Shanann had told her while she was gone that things were bad and she wasn't sure what she did. She thought it was because of his parents. That's where it all stemmed back.
Well, that makes sense.
From.
I mean, yeah. There had been an argument.
A lot of animosity there. She figured that Chris always got bent out of shape when they had these arguments.
Yeah.
We also find out that his parents didn't like Shanann and didn't even come to their wedding.
Yeah.
Again, that's a shitty thing to do.
It sure is.
That's your son.
Yep.
It's not about you and Shanann. It's your son. So you would think that they would be there to support him, but they didn't.
Yeah.
We hear that the reason they don't like her is because she's bossy and his mom never thought that Shanann was good enough for him.
Yeah.
And that's also shitty because it should not be determined by you. It's determined by your son or daughter and who they love.
Right.
Doesn't matter if you like them or not. Yeah. You know, it's not you. And they're different people.
Yeah.
They also said that Shanann had taken Chris away from them and moved him out to Colorado. So they were upset about that too. They had mentioned that his sister also didn't like her.
Well, and again, I mean, it's pretty obvious that he is the submissive one in this relationship.
Yes.
She definitely wears the pants.
Yep, absolutely.
And I think they probably felt like maybe she was like controlling him too much.
Yes. Or manipulating him or something.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Now the investigator asks Chris if she could have been talking with anyone, basically bringing up an affair.
Yeah.
And again, I think this is a tactic because they already knew that he had been having an affair. So they wanted to see how he posed it or if he put blame on her.
Sure.
I think that.
Yeah.
The investigator also brings up him being in shape now.
Yeah, his appearance.
Being from 245 pounds down to 180 pounds.
Which is a huge leap.
It is. And he said that that's when men typically start cheating, mm-hmm. is when they get their physique back or they feel good about themselves.
Yeah.
And it makes sense.
Well, if you think about it too, if it's somebody who has struggled with their weight for maybe most of their life, they probably didn't have a ton of confidence.
Mm-hmm.
Now they, you know, quote unquote, look great.
Yeah.
Look amazing. And now they're getting attention that they weren't getting before.
Right. Right.
It can be flattering.
Absolutely. And Chris says that he didn't cheat on her. Never cheated on my wife. To me, it's like, why lie? They're going to find out. They will look at your phone records. They will find photos. They are going to look on all your computers. Every single device that you would have been able to talk to her on, they're going to find it out. So yeah. Why lie about it?
He's such a child.
Yes.
Literally, the whole time that he talks, I'm like, I feel like I'm talking to like a 12-year-old.
I cringe. He is just
He's
awful.
Icky. Yeah, just icky.
Yep.
Something else that I thought was a little bit interesting, too, is that at one point, Shanann is doing like one of her little videos and she talks about, now this is again like her video that she's posting to social media. She talks about how she's definitely the dominant one in the relationship and he's very sweet. He's very calm, that she's the high strung one in the relationship. And then she goes on to say that she always has, or she'll always say, that she has more patience for kids than she does for adults. And that goes for her husband. It's just another way, I believe, of giving her in-laws fuel for that fire.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's one thing to think those things. It's another thing to say them for the world.
Yep. And nothing goes away on the internet.
It's it's
there.
Well, yeah, because we're watching it now.
Yes.
We found it and we didn't even know these people back then.
Right.
Now, on August 15th, at this point, Shanann and the girls have been missing for 3 days. They decide that they're going to administer a polygraph test for Chris. Mm-hmm. Chris, you know, they ask him, would you be willing to take one? He goes, sure. So they get it all set up. Now, they don't introduce the woman who administers the polygraph test. They don't bring up her name at all.
No, which I found weird.
I did find that kind of weird. She clearly worked for the police department.
Yes. Yep.
And also, like, side note, I loved her sweater. Oh my gosh. The first thing, I think I texted you right away when I saw it. I'm like, oh my God, I love her sweater with the patches on the elbows. Why are those cute little patches on elbows just adorable?
I know.
Oh, so anyway, so it cuts to them in the room. She's introducing herself, introducing the equipment, telling him how it's going to happen. And she talks about how he needs to remain calm, just answer the questions as they come. The test is, it's not going to hurt. He's not going to feel anything, but they're just going to go through the whole situation. Mm-hmm. And she asks him to tell her the whole story as if they were her friends that had not seen each other in a really long time. And he had to give all of the details fresh to her.
Yep.
Now, this polygraph examiner is, I mean, she's fucking savage, man.
Like, yes.
You could tell she's like a no bullshit kind of a person. I love her because I am also one of those people. Just kind of say it like you mean it.
Yes. Yes. Well, she also did it a little passive aggressively too.
Well, Minnesota nice.
Super, super nice. Yeah. But she was totally being a bitch to him.
Yeah. Oh, it was great. Yeah. So she says, and it was almost as if it was like a warning. She says, you know, I hope you know that if you had anything to do with their disappearance, that it would be really stupid for you to come in here, you know, to be here. It would be really dumb for you to sit down and take this polygraph. You shouldn't be sitting in this seat about to take a polygraph if you had anything to do with it. And he's just like, okay. And he sits down.
Yeah.
The other thing that she says is that the coolest thing about this polygraph test is that there's currently only one of us in this room that know what the truth is. And in about 5 minutes, there's going to be two of us. It's fucking awesome.
I love it so much.
I do too. And he's just, okay, just so fucking dumb.
Because
I just can't even handle
it. He actually thinks that he's going to pass, or he'll figure out a way to pass.
Oh, yeah.
I truly believe he thinks that in his mind.
Yeah.
It's like, you cannot monitor your blood flow and shit like that, that these tests go off of, you know? Obviously, they're not admissible in court, but it gives them a better idea of what they're dealing with.
Absolutely.
Truly believe it. And that's why people do it.
Yeah. Well, it gives them a way to almost put their foot in their mouth.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. And at one point, you know, he's answering the questions and she even tells him that his breathing is all over the place and that he has to calm down. And he's like, oh, okay, sorry. It's just, it's hard to relax. And then he takes this big breath, right? And the whole time I'm just like, why do you always have an answer for everything. Mm-hmm. There's always an excuse for everything. It's like, are you completely full of shit?
Yes, that's what I had down. Lying sack of shit.
Well, and then it cuts to a little, you know, text back and forth where Shanann is saying that she can feel that he's pulling away, that he's not responding to their texts while she's down in North Carolina. And one thing that I wrote down is that it's woman's intuition. Like, a woman kind of knows when something's going on. And I think that's something that we have that men don't have for obvious reasons. But I just thought it was really interesting.
Absolutely. Oh my gosh. And then we see a video of Bella, who is Shanann's oldest daughter, 4-year-old, singing a song about her dad, saying that her daddy is her hero. He helps her grow up strong. I literally got goosebumps hearing her watch it. And this was actually one of the videos that I shared on Facebook right after this happened.
Really?
Because it tore my heart apart.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it. It's so tragic. That's all I can think of. It's just so heartbreaking that he did this to his girls. I mean, not only Shanann, obviously, and her being pregnant with their son, but to his two girls.
I know.
Again, why?
Well, and again, it goes right back to, you know, what we talked about with Gabriel Fernandez, how a child's love is unconditional.
Yeah.
These girls did not expect a damn thing from him except to, you know, help him tie their shoes, to tuck them in at night, to read them books. I know. Gosh. I know.
It's heart-wrenching.
It is.
Now, we find out that Chris left for North Carolina on July 31st so he could fly back with Shanann and the kids. So now they've been there for 5 weeks.
Yeah, because he goes out for the last week.
Yep, yep. Because, of course, he has to work, so that's why he couldn't originally go with them.
Yeah.
And we see the girls running up to greet him at the airport. They are so excited to see their dad. Again, my heart is fucking breaking over here.
Yeah.
Because you know how it ends, and it's horrible and horrific. And we see that they bring the girls to the beach for the first time together, which I thought was kind of nice of Shanann to do, to like wait for him to get there, to take the kids to the beach together. And we see a text exchange from Shanann and her friend, and she's texting her about how he has only kissed her once since he got there.
Yeah.
No hug, no ass grabbing, no nothing.
Yeah.
And reminder, he hasn't seen her in 5 weeks. So she's very concerned and frustrated and curious and inquisitive about what the hell?
Yeah.
Shouldn't he be super excited to see me and want to touch me, want to hold me, want to kiss me because he hasn't seen me in so long?
Well, my guess is, there's that dog bark again. Well, my guess is too, I mean, they're on kid number three. Clearly, he's attracted to his wife, you know? So maybe he is a little bit more touchy, feely, affectionate towards her, and now it's like not happening and she is very confused.
Well, yeah. And she said that she wanted to cry, but we see a picture perfect photo of her and Chris on the beach that was posted to Facebook.
Yeah.
So everyone else thinks that it's going great.
Oh yeah. What they're a both great smiling.
Trip. Yep. Family photo, couple photo. It's perfect, right?
Yep.
We do see another text exchange from Shanann and her friend about how it's been 5.5 weeks with no sex and he's never been like that unless he was getting it somewhere else.
Yeah.
He's completely shutting her out and she couldn't really understand why.
Again, I think that goes into that woman's intuition, man.
Yeah.
Like when something that drastic changes, like you know something's up.
And you know it wasn't because of some big argument you guys had or there wasn't like a defining moment that happened.
Right.
That made this change occur. It came out of the blue for Shanann.
Right.
Yes, they still argued. They still had their differences and they still had their little tiffs. Well, sure.
They were a married couple. I mean, who doesn't?
Exactly. But to her, this was completely different.
Yeah.
And it was because of his girlfriend.
Yeah. We're now back in the interrogation room where they had administered the polygraph test.
Yeah.
And the woman who had given him the polygraph test then brings in the deputy who had originally been interrogating him. And they sit him down and they say, look, you didn't pass. I think you knew you weren't going to pass. I think you knew that from the moment you walked in. And he goes, well, I didn't lie, though.
I didn't lie on that test.
Yeah. He says it like 8 times. Mm-hmm. I didn't lie, though. I'm telling you the truth. I did not lie during that.
He's hoping that his words will make them change their mind about the test results. Like, come on.
Yeah. Again, it's like dealing with a 12-year-old.
Yeah.
It's very hard for me to like take this guy seriously.
I know.
Despite what he did, you know?
Right.
Now, the woman is then, you know, prompting him to just come clean. Like, I could tell from the time you walked in, you looked like you had something on your chest. Let's get it off. Let's talk about this. I know that you want to talk about it. He just kind of keeps stuttering. He's not clear. He's kind of like a child in my mind. And he just keeps saying like, well, he hopes they come home. He hopes they come home.
Right.
It's just very weird.
Because in the back of his mind, he already knew where they were. So, and I don't think he is very methodical in his plan about what he was going to tell them. So he just kept repeating himself over and over again, hoping that that was going to make them believe him or something.
Yeah. I kind of get the impression that he thought that this was all going to be kind of tied up in a neat little package with a perfect little bow on it. And it was really just going to kind of blow over in a week.
And I really think he thought he was going to get away with it.
Absolutely. Yeah. So on August 15th of 2018, we see the first talks about the girlfriend, Nicole Kessinger. Now she's speaking to police. Now she says that they met at work in June, that he had told her that he was in the process of a separation, that she knew he had kids, she knew he was married, but that he had said they were in the process of a separation.
Correct.
Now, that means that you have already separated, you're not, you know, together, both parties are aware of it, and you're maybe working towards reconciliation or towards a divorce.
Right.
They then show some video footage of the two of them. Is it called sand surfing? They're on like some dunes and stuff, and it looks like they're literally on like little surfboards.
I've never seen anything like it. I could not tell you what it is.
It looked like snowboarding, but on sand.
Yeah.
What it looked like.
Yep.
I don't know where it was. They didn't really even mention where it was, but I'm assuming, I mean, it's got to be somewhere in Colorado.
Right.
I don't think they would have taken a trip. I think that would have been talked about at some point of a plane ticket popping up on their bank account. And then it shows, you know, them like wearing like bandanas around their face. And why was I immediately like, that doesn't look weird at all.
COVID.
I'm like, it all comes full circle.
I was thinking the same exact thing.
It was so weird. I wrote it down. I'm like, wearing masks. How relevant. She says that, you know, Nicole did not know that Shanann was pregnant. She didn't find out until it hit the media that there was a missing pregnant woman.
So this is where I'm a little confused.
Yeah.
Because they talk about how he had planned to murder Shanann to get out of his old life and into his new life. But did he think about it at all? Because if he killed them and disposed of them and they found her body, which they ended up finding her right away.
Yeah.
She would find out that she was pregnant. Like, so he doesn't think. He's an idiot.
No, he's an idiot for sure. To me, I thought he was just too much of a fucking coward to bring it up. Because how do you explain?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Like, how do you explain that I'm now leaving my pregnant wife with my two girls under 5?
Well, yeah, because it diminishes his story that they're separating. Because if they were separating, they probably wouldn't be sleeping together anymore.
And they probably wouldn't be pregnant.
Exactly.
Yeah. So that was my whole thing. I'm like, you fucking piece of shit.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Now, during this whole, you know, speak with Nicole Kessinger, she seems like very concerned about the girls' disappearances. I mean, she's talking about how she is like very worried for them. She says that she had basically, you know, like I said, met Chris back in June, but that the whole 5 weeks that Shanann and the girls were down in North Carolina, they spent together in Colorado. And I mean, they show footage of them again, like on that sand surfing trip or whatever. And Nicole is saying that she's just so happy that Chris came with her. She's having such a fun time. Then there's footage of, I don't know if they're in a hotel room or if they're in one of their bathrooms, but you see a photo of Nicole in like a bikini.
Yeah.
And in the reflection of the mirror, you see Chris is the one taking that photo. And he's just looking at her all lovingly. I mean, he truly looks like he has just fallen head over heels for her.
And he says that too.
He does.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, with the interrogation after the polygraph test, Chris admits, yes, that he did cheat on Shanann with Nicole. At one point, they ask him, you know, why he's not crying over his missing baby girls. And he says, well, don't look too far into that. Like, what? You haven't shed a fucking tear yet at all.
And your wife and two babies are missing.
Yeah. And he says, well, I'm hoping that they're still around somewhere.
I mean, I'm hoping they're still alive. It's like, oh, you're such an asshole.
But the thing too is like, you would just be like freaking out. He never looked like he was freaking out.
No, because he knew where they were.
The whole time.
And that's the difference. I mean, someone who's really mourning and is really worried is frantic, looking all over, can't sleep. He doesn't even seem to care.
Oh, I bet he hasn't lost a minute of sleep. He probably hasn't skipped a single meal. He certainly doesn't look like he's been skipping his push-ups.
God.
Yeah.
So while they're having this tough interrogation talk, Chris shakes his head and asks to speak with his dad. And we can see that he's starting to crack and break down. Chris tells his dad that he doesn't want to protect her. He's throwing Shanann under the goddamn bus, using that storyline that the polygraph examiner had gave him. Because she basically had mentioned, did Shanann do something to them? And you felt like you needed to do something to Shanann? So she had put that in his mind, and now he's using that with his dad.
Yeah.
To basically throw her under the bus.
Yeah.
Chris said that she smothered them. They were blue. He freaked out and did the same thing to her. Does he understand how unrealistic that sounds? Why would she need to smother her children if Chris told her he wanted a separation? He's literally a fucking idiot. That storyline doesn't make sense.
You know what makes more sense? Hey, honey, I want a separation. But wait, I'm pregnant. You can't leave us. Wait, she was already pregnant.
Right.
And they already knew that. Why kill your kids to keep somebody? That doesn't make sense.
Doesn't make sense. We see that the police are going back to their home after this confession to start processing the evidence inside the home. And they towed his truck,
yep,
all that kind of stuff to make sure that they could keep it as intact as possible, since it now had already been 3 days
passed. Yeah.
And we see the polygraph examiner coming back in after that conversation with his dad. She's rubbing his back when she walks in. I hated that so much, but I understand why she did it.
It was hard.
Oh, I know. I hated it. It like literally made my skin crawl. But I understand that she's trying again to get him comfortable because he has yet to really tell the real story.
Oh, yeah. She's coaxing the truth out of him.
Right.
Where for us, we're watching this going, we already know what you fucking did.
Yeah.
You piece of shit.
Yeah.
Where she, at this point, they have an idea, right? But they don't fully know.
No.
So they're trying to make him comfortable so that maybe he'll warm up and open up.
Right. Make him feel
like... It was like, hard to watch that, though. I totally get that.
Yes. And make him feel like he's in a safe space.
Yeah.
Right? When in reality, he's not.
No. The safe space was when he wasn't there.
Exactly. So Chris starts explaining where they're at. And it kind of sounds like he's crying or trying to cry. But I truly believe that if he is indeed crying, that he's crying over his own life.
I thought the same thing.
No way is he crying about Shanann and the baby.
Because doesn't he say something like, what's going to happen? And then he breaks down.
Yeah. Because he realized now he let it out.
Yeah.
Yeah. He let it out. Now he's fucked. The investigators then leave the room again. And he's in there with his dad alone. And the first thing he says is, the problem is, I don't know if they believe me or not.
Yep.
And that's all he cares about. That's all he cares about is if they actually believe his story because he knows it's not believable.
Yeah.
Because it's not the true story, well, right?
And I think, too, this family has really been built on appearances.
Yes.
So I think that's something that's also kind of ingrained at this point.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And then we hear at the very end that he says, please, God, forgive me. Because now it's all coming full circle and he knows he's not getting out of this.
No. They're not letting him go. On the screen, we then see aerial footage of the tanks at what they call Survey 319, which was the location that Chris had been working at that morning. And they're asking him, with this photo, point to us where Shanann is. And he goes, well, how recent was this taken? She goes, this was taken this morning. He goes, oh, my thought was like, do you not see like a fresh dirt pile? I mean, you buried her. It was just weird. But points to the spot of where she is. And they say, what's the sheet over there? Where'd that come from? And he was like, oh, that was what she was wrapped in. So he didn't even bury the sheet, which was kind of weird.
And it's probably because he was in a state of probably hysteria. I can only imagine if you're doing something like this, you probably don't even think about anything, really. You're just trying to get the hell out of Dodge.
Yeah.
But he's still a fucking idiot. So I
feel like he's too stupid to even think that far. Isn't that funny?
That's true.
Yeah, like I just feel like he can't even possibly do that.
I'm giving him way too much credit.
He then points, you know, they ask, well, okay, if that's where Shanann is, where are the girls? And he points to the two oil tanks. And they're like, well, buried under that? And he goes, no, they're inside of it. And he's like, oh, how did they get in there? And he goes, well, there's this opening on the top. There's like a little hatch. And they show basically a photo of a crime scene with a tape measure that shows that this opening was only 8 inches big. 8 inches.
Oh, my God.
That he shoved Bella and Cece through.
The visual is horrifying.
Thank God they don't show anything.
Oh,
in
my
this
God.
One.
I don't think they'd be able to be completely honest.
Probably not.
I don't know that they would be able to because it would be way too graphic. And I would never want to see something like that because these two little girls are just so fucking adorable. And to realize this horrific thing that happened to them is just too much for me.
Too much, yeah. So he's going with this story that Shanann smothered the girls and that he attacked her out of retaliation for this act.
Mm-hmm.
And the interrogation officers say, are you okay with the public knowing what she did? And he goes, yeah, because I did not hurt those girls. And she says again, are you okay with the public knowing this side of the story? And he's like, yes, I did not hurt these little girls. I think they know.
Mm-hmm.
Shanann had nothing to do with this.
Well, of course. And the investigator even said that he had a new life and wanted to get rid of his old life, right?
Oh, yeah. You can see right through the bullshit.
Absolutely. You're either a monster or you're something else. Again, We come back to the monsters.
Yeah. Well, and here's the other thing too. If he did in fact kill her because she had taken the lives of their children, why hide the bodies?
Right.
45 minutes to an hour away from where they live?
You wouldn't.
No, it doesn't make any fucking sense.
Because you would call out of panic, right? That, oh my God, I can't believe I just did this, but this is what she did. You would call the police and confess to what happened.
Yeah, absolutely.
But he didn't do that. He had to hide their bodies.
Yeah. So it was about 3 days before the murder. It was August 10th, where you see footage of Shanann and Nicole on this trip for training for their company in Arizona. Yep. And you see that she is sending a text to Chris about how she's so excited that they're having a baby boy. So mm-hmm. She must have just recently found out.
Mm-hmm.
She also talks about having left a letter for him. And they span on the letter, and I didn't write it down because it's honestly way too fast. And it was a couple of pages long.
Yeah, and I basically wrote down, it's just an I miss you letter. Basically, and I miss you of everything in their life.
Yeah. Yeah, she says, you know, I've missed you. I'm so happy now. I'll be civil with your mom, I promise. And talking about how she had really appreciated him allowing her to hold him that morning before she left. So it sounds like she is feeling like maybe they're on the mend. You know, he must have given her some type of a feeling, or maybe he was a little bit more, I don't know, touchy with her right before she leaves. Now, during this weekend that she's gone in Arizona, he's at home with the girls. So he's watching the girls. She's gone. It's a Friday, Saturday, Sunday thing. Then she comes home.
Yeah.
3 days after them being missing, there's footage on the screen of him being arrested after his confession.
Yep. Thank God.
Thank God. 4 days after shows them recovering Shanann's body. It also talks about how there's like a news conference going on and they're talking about how they know where the girls are, but they're trying to work out details on how to retrieve them from these tanks. Because again, it's not like a giant door. I mean, I don't know what kind of oil this is, to be honest. I mean, I don't know if they can just simply, they can't just cut a hole in the side and just let it pour out, right? They have to have like a way of doing this.
From what I could see, they were at the bottom of the tank. I think they were probably draining it, is what I'm assuming.
Right. Yeah. And those are big tanks.
And there has to, I don't know. I don't even want to know. God, it's terrible.
It is fucking terrible. They then show, you know, different candlelight vigils going on for them as well. So everybody knows what happened at this point.
We see an officer again speaking with Nicole Kissinger, Chris's girlfriend, and they're asking her if she had ever said anything to him about his kids being a problem or his wife being a problem. Right. And she said never. She kept saying never. I've never said anything like that to him. And she was just as shocked as everyone else was. He's such a liar, she says. And she really thought Shanann had left. He had her convinced that Shanann had left to blow off steam, took the kids with her, everything would be fine.
Yeah.
He had her totally convinced. Now we find out that Chris had went out to dinner with Nicole on the Saturday before the murders. And he told Shanann that he was going to a Rockies game.
Yeah.
And Shanann had checked their bank statement and saw that the dinner had costed $63, which seemed like a lot. And I thought this was a little funny because I do the same shit.
Yeah.
Because I get notifications when money's getting taken out and I always look into it.
Yeah.
Just because I like to be anal about that kind of stuff.
Well, yeah, that's your money. It's your livelihood.
Well, yeah. And I definitely got where she was coming from there.
Well, and clearly we already know she has some kind of a feeling that something's going on.
Yes.
So she's just waiting for him to slip up.
Yep, exactly. And Shanann had looked up the menu even to try and check out if his story made sense.
Oh, yeah. She wasn't born yesterday.
Well, yeah, exactly. And she found out that everything on that menu, he would have never been able to get up to $63 by himself.
No.
It just didn't make sense.
No, he said something about ordering a salmon and a beer, which would have only cost about $30.
Right. So where did that extra $33 come from?
I mean, you can clearly tell there's two people here.
Yes.
Yeah.
And she even knew when he got home because their security system sends them alerts. And she knew that he didn't get home until after 10:30.
Yep.
Which she also found weird.
Well, yeah, that's very late for a dinner.
Exactly. If you're by yourself.
Yeah.
Chris is in court now. And he learned that he could get life in prison without the possibility of parole or the death penalty.
Now, at this point, you're seeing a bunch of news coverage and like they're talking about different social media. I don't know if they're lives or if they're like interviews between people or
even just comments
and maybe just people are reading them. But there is so much hatred towards Shanann.
So much victim blaming and shaming. It really turned me off.
It was hard. And the worst part was there was a lot of back and forth. And they were also attacking Shanann's family, too. It didn't just stop with Shanann. It went all the way to her parents and everything, too. It was awful. About 3 months after the murders, there was a press conference, and the detective comes out and he's talking about how Chris was found guilty on 9 counts of murder. You know, murder in the first degree for 3 counts, 1 unlawful ending of a pregnancy for Nico Watts, 3 counts of tampering with deceased bodies. Basically, he would have gotten the death penalty. However, he pled guilty.
Right.
So he never had to go in front of a jury.
And he also actually got 2 murder charges per child.
Yeah.
Because of a statute, I guess, that the children had not yet gotten to the age of 12 and they were under his supervision and trust. So that added an additional murder charge to his roster. And that's how they got to the 9 count.
Isn't that crazy?
It's so weird. I've never heard of that before, but good for him.
Fuck yeah.
He fucking deserves it.
Yeah.
We're now at February 18th, 2019, and this is the story of the night this incident occurred.
As told by Chris.
Now, Chris says that Shanann got home at 2 o'clock a.m. He had a feeling she knew about the affair. Saturday was the last straw for her, going out to eat with Nicole and using their actual bank card.
Oh, yeah.
He wasn't even hiding it.
Yeah.
There was no hiding it anymore for him. He felt her get into bed. They ended up having sex. And when he woke up a bit later in the morning, he told her it wasn't going to work anymore. And Shanann goes, "What happened? What was last night?" Which, as any female or woman would say, You made me think everything was good. And now 3 hours later, we're waking up and it's not good.
Well, because again, men are from Mars, women are from Venus.
Exactly.
Sex to us is not just sex.
Right. It means more than.
It means a lot more.
Means more than just the act itself.
Absolutely.
So in Chris's words, Shanann had said that, "I knew there was someone else. You're never going to see your kids again." And Chris told her he didn't love her anymore. And that's when the act happened. She told him to get off her, and he then put his hands around her neck. He already had something implanted in his mind that he had to do it. He woke up and it was going to happen. And that's what Chris was telling this investigator.
Yeah.
And he also said that she didn't fight. And then Bella came into the room. "What's wrong with mommy?" she says. And Shanann was face down on the bed at this time. And then he carried her downstairs in the sheet and put her on the floor in the backseat of his truck and put the girls in.
Ugh, put her on the floor. I was like, you didn't even put her in the passenger seat? It was so weird to me.
It was weird.
Yeah.
The whole thing is so strange.
Which also makes me think that he did not plan this out very well.
No, not at all. Like I said before.
He does claim that he had just lost control. Like, he woke up feeling like it was going to happen, that he couldn't control it, but he also didn't have a plan for it.
Right, yeah. Right. And we find out that it's actually about a 45-minute to an hour drive out to this oil field where he ended up burying them. He was wondering why he didn't stop, why something didn't change, why did he have to go to the extent that he did? We're all asking the same fucking question.
Right.
Why did this happen? We find out that he killed Cece first by putting a blanket over her head. She didn't struggle. Bella said, "What happened to Cece?" And then Chris said that every time he closes his eyes, he starts to see her say, "Daddy, no." And that was it. And I fucking hope he is haunted by that for the rest of his worthless, miserable life. What a fucking
Seriously.
Asshole.
I know.
How could you do that? How, with a conscience, a human being, you made another human being that is a part of who you are. How could you do that?
I know.
It's
I know.
Awful.
It's totally awful. I can't imagine. On November 19th, 2018, we're in the Weld County Courthouse in Colorado. Now, they're talking about how this had to have been somewhat premeditated, that he knew he had done something wrong. Because after he had disposed of the bodies, he made several phone calls that day. One was to the kids' school, saying that they were being unenrolled. Two, that he had called a realtor to talk about selling their house. And that he had also texted his girlfriend Nicole about their future together. First off, I'm wondering if the police knew kind of early on that he had called the school to have them unenrolled.
I know. I wonder that too.
Because there had to have been some type of like a, they would have looked into it. Did the girls show up to school today? Because they're not at home. Well, no, the dad called and said that they weren't going to be here anymore. Like, what? Did that?
It is so weird. That is, okay, if you're
again,
trying
he's
to
an
get,
idiot.
If you're trying to get away with a crime, you're not going to be doing this shit the next fucking day.
He clearly has watched zero true crime shows because you and I could probably dispose of a body a hell of a lot better than he could. And we wouldn't be caught for a bit. He lasted 3 days.
Literally.
Amateur.
Well, and the thing too is, why couldn't he get a divorce?
Well, seriously.
So what is so bad about that? I don't really understand. We actually learned a little bit too that they actually filed bankruptcy in 2015. So to me, they probably don't have a ton of assets, right? That they have to, you know, separate divide. So what is the problem with that? Why can't we get divorced? Why is it that the first thing he has to consider is murdering his whole family?
Yeah.
Why is that ever a thought?
No, seriously.
That is what I cannot get through and process in my head. It doesn't make sense.
No. Why did they all have to lose their lives for him to get what he wanted?
Exactly.
Now, this is during the sentencing portion because he, again, didn't go through to a jury because he pled guilty.
Yeah.
So he went kind of right on into sentencing. So at this point, they're doing their impact statements. And the first person that stands up is Sandy Rusick, which is Shanann's mom. And she is addressing the court and Chris. And she says, and I quote, "We loved you like a son. We trusted you. Your faithful wife trusted you. Your children adored you. They also trusted you. Your daughter, Bella Marie, sang a song proudly. I don't know if you got to see it, but it was, 'Daddy, you're my hero.' I have no idea who gave you the right to take their lives, but I know God and his mighty angels were there at that moment to bring them home to paradise. Thank you, Your Honor." End quote.
Oh my goodness.
I know.
You could tell she was just breaking up and you could see her dad. Her dad would have never been able to do that because he was bawling.
He was a mess. Through multiple times on this. Every time I saw him, I was just like, oh, that was his baby girl.
Breaks your heart over and over again because that is exactly how I would be.
Oh, it was awful. The next and really only other impact statement that they show in the documentary was from Chris's mom, Cindy Watts. So both moms stood up and gave their statements. Now, Cindy says, and remember, she didn't like Shanann, but she also obviously didn't want her dead.
Right. Or her grandchildren.
Those were her grandchildren. Yeah. So no matter how she felt about Shanann, those were her grandbabies.
Yeah.
Now she says, and I quote, "I am still struggling to understand how and why this tragedy occurred. This might be hard for some to understand how I can sit here under these circumstances and tell you all that we are heartbroken. Although we cannot imagine what could have led us to this day, we love you." And then she turns around, "and we forgive you, son," end quote. There was not a dry eye in the courtroom. And I even wrote down Shanann's dad, because he was just a puddle.
Yeah. And of course, Chris is a damn coward and doesn't make a statement because he has the choice. The judge asks him if he'd like to make a statement and he chooses not to. Of course he does.
Well, he has nothing to say.
No, he doesn't.
Nothing that he says makes sense anyway.
Nope. The last statement we hear is from the judge, Marcelo Copcow. He says, and this is not verbatim, but in a gist, he says that this is the most inhumane and vicious crime that he has handled out of the thousands of cases that he has seen. Anything less than the maximum sentence would depreciate the seriousness of this offense. He will serve the rest of his life in the Department of Corrections. He ended up receiving 3 life sentences.
Yeah.
To be served concurrently with one another, of course. Shanann's father thinks he killed her while she was sleeping because she's a fighter. And he wouldn't look the way he looked had she been awake. He had not a single scratch on his body at all because we see the photos that they took immediately when he got to the police station.
Yeah.
We pan back then to the very beginning when the police show up to do the welfare check. And they're showing all of the events that happened up until his trial and his conviction. They kind of end with a very nice Shanann video montage. And it's really nice to see them in a happier state.
Right.
Right. It's very heartwarming, but also heartbreaking too, to see it.
I think what's nice about it is that contrary to what we saw with Gabriel, where it was all torture and all a terrible life, this family actually had a really nice, happy life.
Yes. And these kids were loved.
These kids were very loved. You can definitely see that.
It fades to black and we see some facts on the screen. The first fact that we see is that 3 women in America are killed by their current or ex-partner every single day.
Yeah.
That is nuts to me.
Isn't it?
That is really scary. But I guess I understand. I mean, we listen and document true crime stories. So I do get that. Mm-hmm. It also says that parents who murder their children and partner are most often men, and that this crime is virtually always premeditated.
Yeah.
It doesn't typically happen out of the blue.
Yeah.
This is premeditated for some reason that obviously benefits the perpetrator.
Yeah. Now, this type of murder situation is actually known as familicide. Now, this is a type of murder, or sometimes it's a murder-suicide situation mm-hmm. in which the perpetrator kills multiple close family members in quick succession. So one right after the other. Most often it'll be children, you know, relatives, spouse, siblings, or their parents. It also says that in about half of those situations, the killer lastly kills themselves. So it would be as if Chris took out Shanann, both the kids, and then himself.
Yeah.
You know, that happens about half the time. So, oh, it was a tough one.
That was a tough one. And I had seen this documentary previously, but having to watch it again.
It was harder the second time.
It was harder the second time.
That's so weird, too, because normally when we're sitting here taking notes on everything, it almost kind of like takes you away from it a little bit.
Well, and I think I followed this case so closely when it first happened.
True.
And it just wrecked me. Like, personally, it just wrecked me. So I think that's why it was a little bit tougher for me to have to actually document and write about it.
I totally get that. I mean, what a piece of garbage. Like,
yeah.
Thankfully, one that will spend the rest of his miserable fucking life behind bars.
Thank God.
Now, don't worry. I know a lot of listeners out there have a hard time hearing cases that have to do with children, whether it be torture or murder or a combination of the both. So next week, we're actually going to give you a break on that. And we're going to be bringing you the story of Cyntoia Brown from the Netflix documentary Murder to Mercy, the Cyntoia Brown story. So we're going to be talking about that next week. So tune in.
I'm excited to do a little research on that.
Me too. That was it for this week. Next week, we have a brand new episode coming out. Remember that we drop our episodes on Wednesday.
Yep.
Yes, we're so excited. Also, not to like toot our own horns or anything, at the moment that we're recording this podcast, we have been live for what? It's been less than 2 weeks.
Yes.
Maybe a week and a half. We already have listeners on every continent in the world except Antarctica.
I can't believe it.
I can't believe it either. It's like, what?
It is so awesome.
It's amazing. I can't wait to just watch this get bigger. I really can't wait to hear what you all have to say about it. So with that, please like and review us on iTunes. Not only does it give us an idea of what you like to hear and what you may want to hear coming up, it also helps out, you know, other people being able to see us in the algorithms that is podcasting.
Yeah, absolutely.
As always, join our Facebook group, Sheer Crime Podcast Discussion Group. You can send us your requests. You can send us memes. You can just say hi.
Yes.
Send us a picture of your pets or your kids, whatever.
And who doesn't love Facebook groups?
Oh, my gosh.
I'm obsessed with them.
They're so much fun. I have so many that I like lose track of which ones I'm in.
I know. And you can actually make real life friends in them.
For real. It's really cool. I love them. And if you'd like to follow our personal social media pages, you can find me, Amy, at Amy_Sawada. That's AME_SOWADA. And Mackenzie at MMillard08, that's MMillard08, on all of the things. And get in touch, you guys.
Yes.
This is just becoming so much fun.
We're so excited. This is such a passion of ours, and we are so excited that we get to share it with all you listeners.
Can't wait to keep going.
Yes.
So with that, we're going to close this out because we have been recording for a very long time. And Kenzie has to cut out a bunch of mistakes that we made along the way. But as always, we're going to close this out with our best tagline.
Yes.
Never run with scissors. Bye, guys.
See ya.